Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. We're broadcasting live from the Morton Center at the Ag PhD Field Day site. We're just wrapping up the Ag PhD Advanced Pest Management Workshop. And Brian, a lot of different bugs, weeds, diseases. Wow, this farming thing, there's a lot to know.
Yeah, so what we're doing here on our show today is if you've got a question for us, anything you would like us to talk about now, agronomy related, whether we talked about it today at all, or anything else that we didn't have a chance to get to, we'd love to take your questions. So even right now, if you want to just raise your hand, one of our people will come around to you with the mic, and then we'd love to get your question. If you could, just give us your first name and maybe tell us what state you're from. We would appreciate that, and then let's hear your question. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's Russ from Minnesota. Fall tillage this last fall, I didn't get it all done, so yep. I'm going to take 80 acres and go no-till.
Okay.
What program do I want to use for herbicides? Because I can't do a plant incorporate, so what am I going to do?
That's a scary thing in Minnesota to go no-till, isn't it?
Wait, are we talking corn or beans here?
Soybeans.
Okay, soybeans.
Okay, well, I get it. You know, especially in Minnesota, there's a lot of tillage done, and no-till is not the most common thing, but it can be really successful in soybeans.
It's really not that much different from an incorporated program because we can still use most of the soybean pre's. If you like Metribuzin, you can still use it. If you like Valor or Authority, you can still use them. Any of the group 15s, you could still use. So that would be like Zidua or Outlook or Warrant. Dual, we've got lots of products that we can use. The only thing that you would have to cut literally would be Trifluralin. Or very few people use Sonalan anymore, but Trifluralin and Sonalan need incorporation. All the rest of those don't. So what a lot of people will do is they'll use the exact same program. Like on our farm, we do a bunch of strip till, which in effect is no-till, and we do a bunch of conventional till. The only change we make is we pull the Trifluralin out, put Prowl in. Now, I will tell you, north of Interstate 80, for all of us up here in Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota, even northern Iowa, northern Nebraska, we are required to spray our Prowl before we plant as opposed to after we plant. So if you say, well, Brian, I don't want to spray my herbicide until after I plant, I absolutely don't want to spray till then, I would tell you, okay, well, then that's going to cut out Prowl. And now you're just going to have to use a group 15. So, for example, what I would probably do, I might think about Fierce. That has Zidua in there, a group 15, together with Valor. And I might throw Fierce with a little bit of Metribuzin. So I'm just trying to say all the options are still on the table for you other than Trifluralin. Okay? All right. We got a question right back there. Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'm Bill from Jackson, Minnesota, home of the AgCo Challengers.
I
got to come up with something. What am I going to come up with for Baltic in the future? Anyway, go ahead, sir.
Okay. Are the nematode seed treatments, are they effective against nematodes? You see Nemasec and there's various other ones.
Yeah, there's quite a few out there now. And
well,
when you think
though, are you asking in soybeans or are we talking in corn?
In soybeans.
Soybeans, okay.
Yeah, there's quite a few products out there, Alevo, a number of them that are doing okay.
Yep.
Aveo, there's just on and on and on. But every one of them will tell you plant a nematode, a resistant variety first, and then just add this on top of that. So we're seeing a little bit of difference, but it's not like this night and day difference. So it's not going to take you from 50 bushel beans to 80 or anything like that, but you may gain a few bushels and get a decent return on investment. So, yeah, if I had a big nematode problem, I would definitely look at that. The other thing I'd look at is see what seed companies are coming with for Peking varieties. We haven't seen awesome yields at a lot of those Peking varieties. But
explain what you mean by Peking.
Well, different source of resistance. So 95% of the varieties or more have the same source of resistance, the PI88788 gene. The Peking gene is different. And it's got resistance to some different nematode variants. So it's worked a little better. The colonization rate, Greg Tilka just had a study that came out from Iowa State's research this year. Colonization rate was down around 10% or less on the Peking varieties. On the PI88788 varieties, it was as high as 50%. So that means on 50% of the roots, there was nematodes. So they're not working near as well as they used to. We need these seed treatments. We need different traits coming out. And right at this point, we don't have great options for you, but we got to start using them.
Here's the biggest issue that I've got with the seed treatments. You have to treat every seed. In other words, if let's say you've got a planter today that could plant two different varieties, and you knew where the nematodes were in your field, and you treated those beans, well, then it's a no-brainer. You're going to gain a bunch. The seed treatments work. But the problem is when you have to do it all over all the acres, well, you've got areas where you're going to gain 5 bushels and areas where you're going to gain nothing. Well, what's your average work out to? That's my concern with it. But, yeah, the seed treatments absolutely work. Clariva is a biological that eats the nematodes, and so we were really excited about that, but we actually haven't seen, I would say, the best we haven't seen anything dramatically better than
the Voltivo. The challenge that is with all these plots, and Greg Tilke has been working on this the longest of probably anybody that we work with at Iowa State, and he'll tell you, my plots are flawed because how do I know I'm going to be right in the hot spot and the worst of the nematodes this year? I might be in an area where there's hardly any. And now I've got all these little plots. Well, there may be a lot of nematodes right here, and I might move over 5 feet with my next treatment, and there aren't any. And so he looks at what the Iowa On-Farm Network is doing, part of the Iowa Soybean Association, because they're doing full fields and half-mile rounds and this kind of thing where you get more of a what's it going to be like on my farm rather than what did you find in one little plot here or there or in a few little plots. So I think it's hard. I think you have to look at that on your own farm and start comparing some of these things and saying, all right, I'm going to do everything I can with crop rotation and whatnot and resistant varieties and go for it that way. The other thing, if you've got a bad nematode problem, you might just have to go a couple of years of corn in a row or more and then go back to soybeans and hope you can help yourself that way. Tell you what, we're up against a commercial break. We'll talk more about nematodes and also take more questions from our audience here following the Ag PhD Advanced Pest Management Workshop right on our own farm in Baltic, South Dakota at the Morton Center. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation, and patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting live from the Morton Center at the Ag PhD Field Day. Say, Brian, I can almost see it. I'm looking out the window at stubble and a little bit of snow. I can almost see our field day. It's coming up Thursday, July 25th. It's just right around the corner.
Yeah, you're going to
start making your plans now.
You're going to be looking at that stubble and snow for a long time yet, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I'm
last year in April, we had 3 feet of snow as a record in April.
That's unusual, though.
I'm certainly hoping we don't have that again.
We could be planting April 10th. Who knows how this year's going to turn out. Maybe we'll have a dry winter, a warm spring, and we'll be rolling early. Let's get back to some of the questions here that we're getting following the workshop today. Go ahead.
Caleb from Belmont, Wisconsin. Humic and fulvic acid products, what have you seen in furrow as well as post? And then industrial hemp, what do you know about that?
All right, let's take the first one, and I'll let Brian take the last one. Humics and fulvics, we're seeing some good things in furrow with humics. We love some of the work that we've seen with the fulvics that we've been doing. With even the foliar applications has been really nice. So, yeah, these are products that actually get naturally produced in our soils, but being able to apply them in specific places like right near our plants or on our plants has been quite beneficial. In fact, last year with our foliar applications where we got the most nutrients into the plant, it was always with the fulvic acid alongside it. So, yeah, there are a lot of products to choose from. The problem is, there's not really a standard set regulatory process on these to be able to tell you exactly how to compare them. So some will say, well, we've got this many percent humic in it, but it's all different. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's better or anything like that or worth more money. So, yeah, it's a little tough. You know, our research lead, Glenn, is actually not sitting too far away from me. You might ask him, which products did you try and which ones worked the best? Because he's tried quite a few. We'll see. We'll try more this year on our farm, but that's definitely in our plans going forward is using more humic and fulvic with really our fertilizer applications, well, both pre and post.
Yeah, but as you say that, Darren, with the humics, we've seen better results when we have soil problems. So, in other words, pH is high, nutrients out of whack,
soil super tight, poor drainage. What Brian's telling you is his soil is perfect, so maybe it's not the best thing in the world for him, but everybody else's isn't. So, I don't know. It's been pretty good stuff to work with for the most part. And Glenn can show you some of our research data. We've only had maybe 1 year on some of these products. Some we've had several years on now that we feel a little more confident in, but it's definitely something we're working on. As far as the industrial hemp, that's something we haven't been working on, so I don't really have any specific knowledge to share with you on that, other than to say soil fertility is going to be important no matter what crop you're raising, and managing that crop intensively, checking it throughout the season to see how you're doing, and staying up on nutrition and so forth is going to be important.
Okay, but as you talk about staying up on nutrition, if we've got any perennial crop out there, so you can think about alfalfa, sugarcane, maybe it's going to be this industrial hemp, any of these perennial crops, let's say that we're running short on phosphorus. How are we going to increase our phosphorus levels? I mean, is foliar feeding super effective with that? No. You can do it, but is it that great? No. Okay, does phosphorus move much in the soil? So if I lay some on the soil surface and I think, oh, rain's going to move it in, does that work? No. So here's my point. I'd be soil testing first before I put in any perennial crop. I'm even thinking about pasture, anything. How are you going to do it? So either you've got to literally go out with coulters and inject it down in there, you know, at some point during that crop's several-year life cycle, or you're going to have to load it up early. So my thought would be, you know what, let's say I'm going to have any crop out there for 4 straight years, okay? It's a perennial crop. This is my one chance to get stuff down in the soil. I'm going to put my phosphorus down. I'm going to put my zinc down. I'm going to put my potassium down, okay? Things like sulfur, boron, nitrogen, I'm not worried about those because we can get those to move down in the soil. But those other ones, I'd look at how much can my soil hold, how much do I need for that crop, and I'd put a whole slug of it down there right away year one. And yes, I realize that means that in year one, your cost is higher, but your cost is going to be lower now for the next few years. So that's a really big thing that I don't think people are really thinking about. They're just planting something and they're just looking at, oh, I got to get by. And it's a lot of us that, you know, are used to raising annual crops, and we figure, well, if I need to, I'll put fertilizer out next year. Well, it doesn't work so well when you got a perennial crop. So we got to be thinking ahead several years down the road on what is our fertility program. So that's probably the number one thing I'd say. Beyond that, you know, you think about the chance for great weed control when you've got some great big tall plant. Well, that sounds amazing because we should have crop canopy. So hopefully we don't have to spray a lot of herbicides. But, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with industrial hemp or anything. So, yeah, to Darren's point, we've never raised it, never really studied it. It just hasn't been a big issue at this point.
Take another question in the back here.
Hi, my name is Lars from South Dakota. Two questions. With the Maristail, is it better to spray in the fall or in the summertime? Because we had a bad problem with that this year.
Yep.
And then also that bug, the gall midge, whatever, where did that come from? Like, how did it, if it just came, like, how? I guess, I don't know. I don't understand.
Okay.
That's a great question. Let's take that last part first. The soybean gall midge larvae issue that we've had in Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, Nebraska, mainly, as far as I'm aware. There are a lot of different little midge bugs that are out there. They lay eggs, they have a larvae stage, and they impact a number of different crops. This one that has adapted to soybeans is just getting started as far as we know. I don't know of it anywhere else in the world, but maybe it is out there. The entomologists seem to think this is something new. That's a great question. No idea how it developed, but it seems to have centered somewhere around Sioux City, Iowa. And it's kind of blown up from that area and moved in all directions. So, yeah, it's fairly new. We've just noticed it the last 5 years. Now it's finally getting enough population that it's really impacting crop the last few years for a few farmers. It's mostly coming out of last year's soybean stubble, moving into this year's new soybean field. So if you've got soybeans right across the road from corn, that seems to be a pretty easy thing for that little bug to move. I don't know how far those larvae, or I'm sorry, how far those little flies can move, but apparently they can move quite a ways because this problem seems to be moving 100 miles or 200 miles in all directions each year. Back to the Maristail question, is it better to spray in the fall or the spring? We've had great success with fall applications, wiping out the Maristail before it gets truly, you know, established with a great big deep root system. When you look at Maristail, if it starts as a winter annual and it starts in the fall, that root system is small when it's just getting going, so it's easier to kill. By the time we get to spring, we've got cool temperatures, so it's tough to get herbicides to work at their maximum, and we've got a great big root system, so now it's going to be a tougher weed to kill. So I would definitely start with the fall app if you can. Then when you're talking those spring apps, the earlier the better, the longer you have to wait, the bigger the plant gets and the tougher it gets to kill.
Yep, absolutely. So, yeah, falls are always going to be our preference, but if you can't get it done in the fall,
that sounds like a cop-out, doesn't it, for the weed of the week, guys? Oh, yeah, you should have sprayed last fall. Sorry. No, you can still get it this spring. The problem is most of them are Roundup resistant, so you're going to end up using Gramoxone, which needs warm weather, Liberty, which needs warm weather. Please don't use dicamba or 2,4-D in front of where you're going to be planting soybeans, but you know, when you think about that, just about every one of these products needs like 70-degree weather in order to work the best. So hopefully you'll get that. All right, another question over here.
In your book, you have other products, Mega Grow and AC97. You called them plant growth hormones. What crops are they appropriate for, and what stage of growth should the crop be in when you apply them? I'm sorry, my name's Dell from Northeast Missouri.
Thanks. All right, great question. So you mentioned Mega Grow and AC97. And AC97 is a combination of mostly micronutrients plus some of those same ingredients that are in Mega Grow. So we're talking about growth hormones, IBA, cytokine, and those kinds of things to try to improve plant growth. So Mega Grow often goes on with a herbicide application to keep that plant in growth mode so it isn't slowed down in its growth because of the stress of working off whatever herbicide we've applied. So they can be used really at any point during the growing season on just about any crop in just about any location. So you can read the labels, of course, for full details on that, because I think they're approved in most states, maybe not in California. We're up against a break. We'll head to break, and we'll be right back taking more questions from our crowd here after the Advanced Pest Management Workshop. Stay tuned.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions. Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting live from the Morton Center at the Ag PhD Field Day site following the Ag PhD Advanced Pest Management Workshop. Taking questions from our audience here. Let's get started right in the back.
Hi, Elaine from Southwest Nebraska. I was curious what you guys have to say about bacterial leaf streak, ways to control it. I guess basically is what I was wondering.
Brian's got all the answers on that one for you. no, another bacterial disease. So kind of like Goss's wilt, hybrid selection is going to be our best tool in crop rotation. We don't have a bactericide treatment for corn that's been reliable. There have been a lot of guys trying to use copper-type products and so forth to stop these bacterial diseases. I'm convinced that with plant health and soil fertility, we can make an impact in that. But when's the last time you fertilized with a significant amount of copper? Probably never. And I know on our farm it was never until just the last few years where we built our copper levels up a little bit with variable rate application across our farm. So it's going to be interesting to see. We used to have a Goss's wilt problem. We haven't exactly had the weather for that on our farm. So I'm kind of curious to see how do we do on these bacterial diseases by building up soil copper. In terms of bacterial leaf streak or Xanthomonas, the thing about that one compared to Goss's is we haven't seen major yield loss. It seems like that one, kind of like tar spot, ties in with gray leaf spot and some of these other diseases, northern corn leaf blight. And most often when I'm looking at bacterial leaf streak in Nebraska, I'm seeing gray leaf spot on the plant too. And when you think about it, they look very similar. They're kind of rectangular lesions, except the gray leaf spot's got Well, it really has integrity within the veins, so it looks kind of square on the sides where bacterial leaf streak is really irregular on the side. Outside of that, they look the same. So I've been called out to number of fields saying, ah, I sprayed a fungicide and it didn't work on gray leaf spot. Can you help me out? I'm like, well, where's the gray leaf spot? What are you talking about? It's all over the leaf. No, that's bacterial leaf streak. What? No. And then we have to look at some pictures and these kinds of things. And I know, I wish we had this answer of, oh, I can stop it. You'll never have it again. The companies don't have as good a ratings on bacterial leaf streak as they do on gosses, but it's something that's coming over time. So we're starting to figure out some hybrid differences there. And I think between hybrid differences and what we're feeding our crops, hopefully we'll find the answer that way.
Yep. The only other thing I'd throw into that is tillage can help a little bit. So, yeah, is it an enormous deal? No, and that might not be an option for you anyway. But, yeah, otherwise it's basically just variety selection, unfortunately. So,
yeah, and there hasn't been a big breeding effort on that. It's been more of observations of, oh, well, we've got all these hybrids here, and we've got bacterial leaf streak. Let's rate them on which one's had it worse. Okay, I'd much rather see them say, ooh, let's find out what we can do for genetic resistance, and let's get this thing fixed. You know, Gosses, well, it took a while. You know, some of the companies, well, like even out where you guys are at, you're not too far from Gothenburg, and that's really ground zero for Gosses wilt. And it took the Monsanto breeders quite a few years before they got to a level where most of their hybrid lineup now is fairly tolerant or above average for tolerance to Gosses now. But it didn't happen overnight. I'm sure it's going to be the same with bacterial leaf streak.
All right, let's get to the next question.
AJ from Iowa. We have a field that we spray for. It's a neighbor that we do his spraying, and he acquired this field last year. And the guy that farmed it before him was really heavy on corn. It's been corn on corn as long as we know.
Okay.
And so as he was planting it, he noticed on some of the backsides of the terraces shatter cane was growing.
Ooh,
and
fun.
He was really nervous going in, and we came in with Roundup and Callisto, and it was absolutely Roundup resistant. And so luckily he had planted Smart Stacks corn, and so we came in with Liberty and were able to wipe out the ones that were up, and that did a really good job. But going forward, he's going to rotate to soybeans next year, and we were thinking Liberty with – he wants to no-till, so we were thinking Prowl up front and then Liberty with another grass killer, I guess. What program would you guys – run?
Yeah.
You know, we talked about some of the tough weeds to control, and all the attention's on the broadleaf weeds and what can we do with Palmer pigweed and some of these things. But you're right, some of these tough grasses really have some merit as well, especially if you've got corn in the rotation. We want to wipe it out in the soybeans. You know, we've got a lot of grass killers post-emerge that we're using for volunteer corn, and many of those will be effective for you, and they're relatively cheap. The other thing, you know, with shatter cane is, yeah, if Roundup isn't going to work, you're kind of stuck going with Liberty Link or potentially Enlist soybeans this year if they get labeled.
Well, okay, so first of all, on the soybean thing, yes, you've got the right program. You want to get a yellow out first, and then you want to follow. If you follow with Liberty, great, but otherwise I'm not too worried about it because we've got all these other grass killers. The grass killers are going to take it out. The big thing with the shatter cane is, can you get it before it starts getting big? Because it grows pretty quickly. So, yeah, we want to spray it small, and the grass killers would be fine. I guess on the corn side of things, you know, I'm thinking back to when Accent and Beacon first out 30 years ago.
I was hoping you weren't going to go there.
Yeah, I am, because I think Beacon, well, Beacon was a little bit better than Accent.
I had a farmer spray Accent Beacon last year, Brian. He called me. He's like, okay, what did we used to use back in the 90s? And I said, used to Accent plus Beacon. He's like, yeah, can I find that still? I'm like, yep, you can still find it. He goes, good, I'm going to use it. And he said it worked well for him. So, yeah, it's chemistry that can be used. But you got to spray it when it's pretty small. It won't take down big stuff.
And the question is, you said the shatter cane is Roundup resistant. Is it ALS resistant? And then the other question is, you know, again, I talk about height. So like last year when it got sprayed with Roundup, how big was it? Was it small or was it big?
I'd say 4 to 6 inches.
It was 4 to 6 inches is all. Yeah, so then.
Is all? That's big.
Well, at 4 to 6 inch height, if a full rate of Roundup is not working, that tells
me
that it probably actually is Roundup resistant. If it had been a foot and a half tall because it got misidentified or something else first, that's where I was going. And then I would say, well, maybe Roundup could actually work on it if it was sprayed right. But obviously it was, you know, sprayed at about the right time, maybe a hair late, but not bad. So anyway, Yeah, Accent Beacon is really your other option, something like that. But that's ALS. I feel more comfortable with the Liberty side of things. The other thing we haven't mentioned, we talked a lot about pest management today, and I don't know that we ever said the words that at this point there are no weeds resistant to Liberty in the world.
Yeah.
So that's,
we talked about that.
That's a pretty good thing, you know, when you start talking about having that ability so to spray far, Liberty in corn or in soybeans.
So far, that is right.
All right. Ready for our next question? Yep, we're right back there.
Doug from Nebraska, two questions. Number one, I've heard you say, please don't spray 2,4-D pre. And
in front of soybeans?
We got talked into doing that, and it kind of screwed up part of the year. But could you elaborate a little bit more on that? And the next thing is, I get a little bit torn. I've asked myself several times. We look after this really super high yield, and we got a book of these guys that raising these super high yields. But I come from part of the country that they're really looking at leftover nitrogen in your soil and starting to do programs on that and implementing programs where they're going to go out and randomly pick places and soil sample them. They don't really know how they're going to do it. But
How random do you think those tests are going to be? I doubt they're going to be super random. Okay, so two questions then. One, 2,4-D, and the other one, how do I raise super high-yielding corn and not have a whole bunch of carryover nitrogen? That's a great one because that's one that everybody in ag needs to understand the strategy to get that done. Okay, so first of all, let's take the first part there, 2,4-D in front of crops. The reason we don't like that in front of regular soybeans.
Or corn. We don't talk about it very often, but we've had guys screw up their corn stand, too, by putting 2,4-D out. 2,4-D is just, it's just hard on crop. 2,4-D naturally kills soybeans. If the soybeans are up, they're dead.
I usually ask people, okay, if you spray your lawn with some form of 2,4-D, and let's just say that your daughter or your son sprayed the lawn and you're gone for a few days, when you come back at the end, you know, you come back on Monday and they sprayed it over the weekend, do you expect you would smell 2,4-D still in the lawn? Yes, you would. Why? Because it lingers around for a little while. And on the label in front of soybeans, they'll say, oh, even at a low rate, we've got to be at least a week or two in front of planting. Why? Because even that low rate could still hurt things a week or two later. The problem is we've got mare's tail, we've got dandelions, we've got a number of weeds, and everybody knows that a low rate's not going to kill them. So we give it a little bit more than a low rate. Now we really have carryover.
Yeah, but anyway, 2,4-D lasts in the soil a little while, and you think about it here, we've got some heavy soils, we have cold temps in the spring, and we're not using stuff up because it is cold and we don't have a lot of growth right then.
All right, we'll get right back to the second part of that question after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Stay tuned.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say, Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall.
Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
We started utilizing the DuoReact system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips, so you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting live following the Ag PhD Advanced Pest Management Workshop here at the Morton Center on the Ag PhD Field Day site near Baltic, South Dakota. Taking questions from our audience, we had a two-part question before the break about why not use 2,4-D in front of corn and soybeans, and the question was already we got the question with, I did hurt my crop last year, so I just want to know why. And then the next part of that question was, oh boy, now I'm trying to blank.
I am too. That's why we tried.
Tell me the second part of your question again.
Oh, high yield.
High yield without having excess nitrogen. Now we go. Yeah. See, and now you're asking Brian, and as I started our workshop off today, I said to everybody here, Brian's got two addictions. One is dicamba. For some reason, he likes the weed control of dicamba. And two is nitrogen. My brother is addicted to nitrogen. He does not want to run short matter what.
As you say that, that was the case before we started doing plant tissue analysis about 15, 20 years ago. We were just putting on excess amounts of nitrogen. Since then, we really haven't. And this year, we ran ourselves short. We've run ourselves short more than we've run long.
Let's be fair.
Let's be fair.
We had a lot of early growth. We had corn tasseling faster than ever.
Yep.
And, it's part of it, though. And we had lots of rain. And here's the thing. It would be so easy if it was just, I want 200 bushel corn. I put on 200 pounds of nitrogen. At the end of the year, I have zero nitrogen left, and I got my 200 bushel corn. But it doesn't work that way. All of a sudden, here comes a 4-inch rain right after we put nitrogen on. Oh, no. Now it pushed our nitrogen down a foot in the soil, and we can't get it all right away when we want it. Or, you know what? I got all kinds of excess heat early. Man, we had growth on our corn plants early this year, and we had tillering, and we had all this stuff going on, and we ran out of gas at the end of the year, you know? And it's just not as simple as, I just have to put nitrogen out there, and I'm going to win. So we've got to monitor things throughout the season. I love some of the tools. I love Farm Command with Farmer's Edge. That's been nice. We can watch online with their crop modeling and their weather stations that are right on our farm, and see where we're at and what our estimated nitrogen usage is and what our estimated mineralization from organic matter is. But our organic matter levels vary throughout our farm, and we're going to get heat at different times. It's hard to know exactly when we can count on that mineralization coming through. You know what I mean? And there's just all these things that could result in nitrogen loss, whether it's volatilization or leaching or denitrification. It's just tricky. It's really tricky to manage that.
Okay, here's the answer to your question.
Thanks for
talking for three minutes about that, Darren.
Not the answer, or we would have had our highest corn yields ever and not our second highest corn yields ever last year.
That's not the point. He's just asking, how do I get rid of excess nitrogen at the end of the season? You raise a cover crop. All the guys on the East Coast now, that's what they're talking about for they're worried about nitrogen testing at the end of the year and also nitrogen leaching out at the end of the season. When the corn crop is there, we don't usually have to worry about a lot of nitrogen leaching out. The corn crop's pulling it up. But at the end of the season, we absolutely have to worry about that because it can just get lost and it ends up down in the groundwater. So you look at like the Delmarva region, for example, they're really worried about any nitrogen, and even just the soil produces its own nitrogen. Organic matter mineralizes it, releasing nitrogen all the time. So if we don't even raise a crop, we have nothing growing there, you're going to have nitrogen loss. So that's where a lot of guys are. As soon as that crop is off, they're seeding a cover crop in the fall to tie up some of that nitrogen. Then when that cover crop breaks down the following year, the nitrogen releases for the crop over time. So anyway, that's how you get rid of nitrogen if you're that worried about it. Beyond that, I would just say this. If you ever have the issue of excess nitrogen, even in parts of fields, this is why I think grid or zone soil sampling is so important. Because when we started grid and zone sampling on our field, we realized we had huge differences. And just think about on your yield monitor, even today when you're going along with corn, huge differences, right? Okay, well, we know that 250 bushel corn pulls a lot more N out than 150 bushel corn. So if we put the same nitrogen rate on everything, that 150 bushel corn, what's our yield limiting factor? Obviously, nitrogen isn't. So the question is, what is, and are we getting that addressed? Well, we weren't getting that addressed until we started doing grid or zone soil samples. Well, now we can see, oh, my pH is bad, or oh, my phosphorus is low, or my potassium's low, or boy, I just need a little more sulfur, or some more boron, or things like that. So what I'm getting at is, now that we have better testing, we can address all these other things so we can actually use the nitrogen that we applied. So anyway, those are some of the things that I end up thinking
I'll give
about.
It to Brian. His simple answer of plant a cover crop, plant cereal rye or something right afterwards, that's the right answer. And all the other stuff that we talked about is window dressing. So, yep, plant the cover crop, you're done. All right, next one.
I'm Dustin from Central Iowa. Last year I put a couple quarts of zinc in furrow on some farms that were low on my soil samples. I got 13 bushels of yield response in
awesome.
My check. Do we want to continue to feed that in furrow, or do we want to build up the soil?
Do you own the ground or rent it?
Own it.
Wait now, Brian, isn't it the same? I mean, wouldn't you treat it just the same? No, you wouldn't. Of course not. Yeah, if you own the ground or have it under long-term control, then absolutely you want
here's,
to invest
here's,
in that
soil. Wait, I got a follow-up question for him. How much did you spend on the two quarts? Do you know, roughly, just roughly. What do you think that cost?
$12.
$12. All right. For $12, how much zinc can you buy if it's dry zinc sulfate, for example? Pounds.
Ooh, see, this sounds like somebody that just put together the workshop for tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Yep, this is one of the things we're going to talk about. So the point is simply this. If I own the ground and I'm going to have it long term, I'm going to look at if I've got low testing soil, in the short term, I'm continuing to do exactly what you're doing. But in the long term, I want to build all the ground up so maybe I can go from two quarts down to one quart. Because my concern, when we start talking two quarts, I got more salt in furrow. And now I have more risk for my stand. So you had a 13 bushel gain this year, but it's possible you might have a 13 bushel loss some year if you had a dry spring, got it too near the seed, that seed was particularly sensitive, those kind of things. So if we can build all the soil up and cut back our rate in furrow, now we should be better off.
But Dustin, you got a 13 bushel gain. I bet your fertilizer dealer is telling everybody in your neighborhood, man, we got a 13 bushel gain with two quarts of zinc and trying to sell everybody. And what we're talking about tomorrow, just a teaser for all of our listeners who aren't here today, you may want to come to the Ag PhD Field Day site to the Morton Center here near Baltic, South Dakota tomorrow, because we're going to tell you what your fertilizer dealer won't tell you.
So anyway, yeah.
There's a cheaper way to get it done.
If I had the book for tomorrow, I could tell you. I got it all put together, and I could tell you what zinc
sulfate
costs,
Brian.
But it's cheap.
I'll grab it. I'll grab it.
It's cheap. All right, let's get to our next question here. Where are we at? Okay, over there.
When planting cover crops and no-tilling,
yep.
How soon should you terminate the crop before you plant the no-till corn into it?
Terminate the cover crop before you plant corn into it is what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So there are different theories. Well, I shouldn't even say theories. There are different answers to this question depending on where you live, how much moisture you have, and what your situation is. So you're going to run into a lot of people down south that are going to say, plant right into the standing cover that's alive. Okay, and that's a great way to go. And for them, that probably works fine. The problem that we get here and as we go west is we're dry most of the time. Now, this year is an exception. This year, you could maybe just let her go. But normally, for when we're dry, we want to terminate it relatively early in the fall even. So we're talking a week or two before freeze-up. We terminate it then, so we're not sucking more moisture out of that ground. So moisture is really our big concern. The other concern that we have is, this comes up in wheat from time to time, like when we're going to seed winter wheat. We talk about eliminating the green bridge. What that means is if you can have a couple weeks before you plant a crop where there's nothing growing out there, then it kills off a lot of diseases and a lot of bugs either move or they die off. So we find less disease problem and less insect problem if we're planting into something that's dead as opposed to planting into something that's alive. So, I mean, those are the things you got to weigh out. So I'm trying to tell you, I don't have an exact answer for you. But for me around here, I'd want to make sure that either my winter was killing it or I'm killing it in the fall because we're dry. If I'm out east or down south and I get all kinds of moisture, I would let it grow into the spring and I'd either terminate it in advance of planting or I'd just plant right into it and terminate it then at that point.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. We'll be right back taking more questions from our live audience here following the Ag PhD Advanced Pest Management Workshop. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
No secrets here, we all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark and Impact Z is a trademark owned by AMVAC Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton Center at the Ag PhD Field Day site following the Ag PhD Advanced Pest Management Workshop. Brian, did you want to start with that or next question?
What was I starting? Oh, the zinc thing? So earlier we were talking about zinc and what would that cost roughly. So zinc sulfate right now, which is 35.5% zinc, and by the way, I'm not even figuring any value to the sulfur in there, but there is value, obviously. That costs roughly 86 cents a pound. So for $12, like he was talking about, I could get about 5 pounds of zinc. Okay, that of actual zinc. So that sounds pretty interesting to me. That would change my soil test roughly 2.5 parts per million. Now, obviously, you know, when we're out broadcasting zinc sulfate, we're not talking about this year as much as we're talking about the future. So that's why I asked, are we owning the ground or are we renting? If we're renting, I'm not going to invest in, you know, the next 5 years in that ground because I don't know if I'm going to have it 5 years. But if I own it, am I going to do it? Yes, I would. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm going to completely eliminate what I'm going to run for zinc in the furrow, but it does mean that at some point in the future, I'm going to be able to cut that number back most likely, but continue testing it and just see.
And kudos for you for trying something different and then measuring the results, because now you can make good decisions going forward.
Hey, one of the things, too, and we've talked to some of these high-yield farmers, they've talked about get zinc levels overall in the soil built up a little bit, because now, number one, we don't have as many issues between the zinc and phosphorus and those ratios. But the other thing is just overall biological and plant health, soil health, those types of things seem to be improved when I've got my overall zinc levels up a little bit in the soil. That's just what the high-yield guys have told us. I don't know that I've necessarily seen that on
our farm. I
would say
we've heard that at the Ag PhD field day the last 3 or 4 years of get your zinc up, get your zinc up, get your zinc up.
All those guys talk about it. Yep.
So I would take that to heart.
All right,
let's take your next question.
Hi, I'm Riley from Canada. I have a question.
He didn't even give us a state.
No, not even a specific spot. He is Riley of Canada.
South Canada.
Everybody knows Riley.
I'm from Manitoba. I'm 20 miles north of North Dakota. I have a question for you. Have you guys thought about building a chart to make pest management a little bit easier with products from Canadian label to American label?
Cool.
Yep, we've thought about it. That's as far as we've gone, Riley, because it's a lot of work.
Well, and honestly, you know, you watch Ag PhD TV, and we like to show product labels. And I don't know where Mark's bouncing around here, but Alex is in the back, and a lot of the graphics that we'll put up, we'll zoom in so you can see what the active ingredient is, because we don't know what that product's going to be in different parts of the world. Like, our show's broadcast in New Zealand, and they've got different product names on things than you guys even do sometimes. And so who knows what it's going to be. But yeah, you're right, getting the active ingredients out. Maybe we just have a cheat sheet of, here's the products we talk about on the show, here's the active ingredients. Good luck finding all of them.
And Riley earlier asked me a question about oats. Was there a specific thing you wanted to know in oats in terms of weed control? Or
hey, we're going to find out how good Brian is in oats, because all that stubble that you see out here that was cover crop is going to be oats next spring, and Brian's going to have to manage that. It's been a few years. How long has it been since you've had oats here?
4 years, probably.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how he does.
Is it five? I thought it was four. All right, well, whatever.
Okay, it's so been anyway. A long time. We've been trying. Glenn, our research lead's nodding about this, because Glenn and I have been trying to talk Brian into oats for quite a while to get him away from this wheat. But
I didn't have my head hair yet.
Glenn said he still had hair the last time he had oats. So that must have just been last year then. All right, so did you have a question on that, Riley?
Yeah, I was wondering about products to use in oats. Back home we use Stellar from Corteva. It's pretty hard on the oats. I'm thinking, do you have something that would still get my weed spectrum, but also...
What do you have for weeds? What are your worst couple?
Kochia, buckwheat, and lamb's quarters.
Okay, kochia, buckwheat, lamb's quarters.
Buckwheat and lamb's quarters, we can get that easy with Buctrol. I was just looking up what Stellar is. Do you know the active ingredient? I got it pulled up.
So what about Curtail M, Brian? What would you think about Curtail M in that situation on oats? So you got Stinger and 2,4-D, right?
Yeah, but you got 2,4-D, and that's my problem. I'd try to avoid that if I can.
If we can, 2,4-D is a little hard on grass crops, but that seems to be the cheap option that a lot of guys want to use, no doubt about that.
Yeah, keep talking, Darren. As soon as I find out what Stellar is, maybe I'll have a better answer here.
Well, that is a challenge. You know, looking at what these pesticide labels are from one country to the next, and there's some differences in when and how you can use them exactly. So that also leads to a challenge, which is why we just talk about the trade names that we know here that are labeled here that we could use on our own farm.
Stellar is MCPA plus fluroxypyr, Starane, and Florazolam, which is
ALS broadleaf killer. So I like the grass starane in there for the kochia. How's the starane working for you on the kochia or the fluoxypyr?
It works really well.
Awesome. Yeah, the guys are struggling now in North Dakota. There's a little bit of what they think is resistance there in North Dakota, so hopefully that doesn't spread to us in South Dakota or to you north up in Manitoba. But if that's working on the kochia, that's awesome. That really helps. Yeah, that's a primary chemistry for us that we would find here for U.S. producers. That would be in wide match. So we'd have stinger and starring in wide match, which would be... boy, that stinger is what I was talking about in the curtail M, to be able to use that for some of those broadleaf weeds and oats as well. All right, that's a great question. Well, Brian's looking up your Stellar for a little bit. Maybe let's take the next question. Is there another question right here? Oh, I don't see that. Okay. I'm sorry. Over on this side. That's where we missed it. So today was all about pests. Tomorrow's going to be about fertilizer at our next workshop and soil fertility, which is getting to be a big deal when you look at economics for next year. It's going to make or break a lot of farms, no doubt about it, getting that fertility piece right. All right, let's take the next question.
I'd just like to expand on our discussion of the zinc and phosphate ratio. Okay, when we do our 2x2, we're putting a concentrated band of phosphate next to the plant. And my understanding is, okay, we're adding zinc to that because that concentrated amount of phosphate limits the availability of zinc to the plant. So are you saying that if we get this zinc phosphate ratio in the entire soil surface correct, when we do a phosphate band, we no longer need the zinc?
You know, I think this is going to be an interesting thing because as we build up fertility levels, we see varying responses to what we're putting in the row or really close to the row. What we're seeing just with some research from this last summer, and maybe Glenn can talk about this after the workshop as we're nearing the end here, but as we've moved some of that fertility out of the furrow and further away, like in a 2x2 or better yet, we had a really good response this year in a 2x2 on each side of the row, as some of the growers around the country, like Randy Dowdy, for example, and others are moving to more of that system, we've seen better yield results. And it's going to be interesting going forward as we widen our testing on heavier soils. Lighter soils, that really seems to show up well. On heavier soils, will we be able to do that, and will we get the same kind of gains? I guess we'll see as we do some more research, but yes, getting that concentration away from that root zone may be different. Otherwise, when you're going to concentrate it and be closer to the row, having a complete blend has shown a positive, and for many of the reasons that you mentioned, that we can overload on one and we get so out of balance that it could limit our uptake on the other. So I agree with you. I think if you're going to still super load phosphorus really close to that root zone, you may need to be putting some zinc out there, at least at a maintenance level or at least at a crop usage level, which a quart puts out 0.2 pounds. That's what your corn crop needs unless you're getting 300 bushel corn. So that may be enough of an answer for you there.
Yeah, but, you know, the whole thing is, why do we need to, I think you used the word super load or something, yeah, a whole bunch of phosphorus out there.
No, concentrate in a band.
Yeah, but, I mean, why do we need to do that if we've built up our entire soil?
Right,
let's say
right. That's what I'm saying. If we can build up soil, we can move some of that phosphorus away from that root zone,
yeah,
so it doesn't have to be right there. It could be over in a 2x2 or something
right,
like that. And yeah, you may not have to have such the volume right by the row if you've got the whole soil profile built up. All right, did you get an oat answer for us yet, Brian, or are you going to have to get it after
it's
the
just,
show?
I mean, I've never really thought about that combination before in oats, but I just know that, you know, when we start talking about the weeds that you're after, what do we need starring in there for?
But kochia.
He did say kochia. Okay, so it was kochia, it was buckwheat, and it was lamb's quarters. Yeah, so buckwheat and lamb's quarters. Yeah, so why are we not running, you know, let's see, would it be starring MXT? The buck-troll starring combo. A buck-troll starring combo. You don't have to have the MCP. We kill all those weeds, and we do it safely.
All right, thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. And thanks for all the questions that we got today. Thanks to everybody for coming. If you're just listening on the radio and you're not here in our live audience, we had some foggy weather this morning, kind of some slick road conditions, as we sometimes get in the winter in the great north. But things turned out very well. If you're interested in coming to an Ag PhD workshop, check out our full schedule at agphd.com.